The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 17th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on a nice day in the Auburn Opelika area. Crazy to think we are over halfway through the month of September. We're entering week 5 of the high school football season and entering week 4 of the college football season. We got a lot to get to on today's show. We're talking Oklahoma. We're talking as we really begin to focus on the Sooners and what Auburn will see in Norman this upcoming Saturday, plus a guest-heavy show as we typically do on a Wednesday afternoon. So we're looking forward to that, having a lot of fun over the next couple of hours. Christian, how are you, sir? Happy Wednesday to you.
Happy Wednesday. I like that dramatic pause that you had in there.
Yeah, it was on purpose.
Right in the very beginning. Happy Wednesday. Yeah, you mentioned, man, we talked about that yesterday with Coach Buster Daniel on Tuesday at 2:30, when we were able to sit down and dive into our Lee Scott segments of how weird it feels that this Friday marks the halfway point.
It's depressing.
Of the high school football season, at least in the regular season. There's hopefuls on both sides with Auburn and Lee Scott that you're playing at least a couple more weeks. But the regular season, yeah, this is the halfway point of the season. It is. It's a little bit depressing, and I know that'll feel a little bit different now that you're at home for quite some more time. It'll feel like you're actually in the real high school football season.
Yeah.
But on the show today, man, it's going to be a fantastic show. We have our kind of deep dive into the Oklahoma Sooners, something we like to do to start the Wednesday show, not necessarily talk as much about the game coming up this Saturday, rather than dive into the opponent, what they like to do, their strengths, maybe some of their weaknesses as well. So that's what we're going to dive into to start the show here today. Before we get with Jordan Hill, you mentioned a couple of our guests, of Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, talking about the Dogs come from behind win in Knoxville, what they're doing in the bye week before Alabama comes to town to take on the Georgia Bulldogs in Sanford Stadium under the lights next Saturday. We got a little bit of MLB conversation, as you are just about a week and a half, you're 10 games or so before the postseason gets started. And I'm going to run with this. I'm going to do all of that, all of my notes right there in one breath. I'm just going to rapid fire. We're going to go crazy.
I don't believe you.
We're reading all of these spots of where all of the standings are, but it's going to be a whole lot of fun, a jam-packed hour number one.
Yep, we're going to get into so much on the show today. So again, if you want to be a part of the show, you absolutely can be. Now is the time to do so, since we do have a couple of big guests coming up throughout today's program. So if you want to be on the show, give us your thoughts. What do you think about the Oklahoma Sooners? Are you worried about the Sooners? Are you worried about Norman? Are you worried about Jackson Arnold having to go back to Oklahoma? I mean, so many people trying to make a storyline out of something that simply is not. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the number to call in, be a part of the show, and be on the line. 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And we start talking about Oklahoma, a team that in the summer, right, in the offseason, There were a lot of questions about this Oklahoma squad. We knew they brought in a couple of big transfers. It was John Mateer at quarterback from Washington State, and it was Jaden Knott, the running back from California. One of those transfers has panned out so far and has looked really, really good. So good, he's already being mentioned in several legitimate Heisman conversations, of course, that being the quarterback in John Mateer. The other one is Jaden Knott, who has done little to nothing for this Oklahoma team when it comes to running the football. Just 9 carries for the California transfer, one who basically dragged that offense along last year out in Berkeley between him and Fernando Mendoza, who is the quarterback now at Indiana. Everybody was worried about this two-headed snake, Christian, of, man, Mateer throwing the football, his running game, and then Jade not running the ball as well. But I don't care what anybody says, Oklahoma has not been a good running team so far this year, outside of John Mateer, who, in all facets of the game, has looked really, really good.
Yeah, the two-headed snake has become John Mateer's right arm and both of his legs. That's kind of where a majority of this offense has come from. Their leading rusher on the season is a true freshman. His name is Torrey Bladelock. Whoa.
There it is. Sound it out.
Torrey Bladelock.
There you go.
Again, a true freshman. He does lead the team in rushing yards, has 166, but John Mateer is right behind him with 161. Jaden Knott, you mentioned, 9 carries, only 17 yards. Had 4 carries for 11 yards against Temple, 4 carries for 9 yards against Michigan, and only had that 1 carry where he lost 3 yards against Illinois State. John Mateer is going to be the guy that this team runs through. It's going to be you hate to say it on one player, but he's kind of where at the point of the success of the future of Oklahoma this season lies on what John Mateer is able to do both inside and outside the pocket. Has 9 total touchdowns on the year so far, 5 of them passing, 3 of them rushing, does have 3 interceptions as well, which I will get to here in just a little bit. But again, the offense will run through John Mateer. You look at some of the targets that he has. His go-to target, one of the best guys receiving the football, comes from the tight end spot. Jaron Kaynak has 14 receptions, 245 yards, has yet to find the end zone, but he's really John Mateer's go-to target in the middle of the field on anywhere between the 30s, right? He catches a lot of balls right at midfield. He's going to be the guy that either lines up at that traditional tight end spot or kind of lines up right in that Travis Kelce, that tight end slot spot. We saw Rivaldo Fairweather do that last year where you're just off the right tackle, just enough to where you don't have to squat down. You can start in your two-point stance. He's going to be that seam beater, kind of right in between the linebacker, right in between the safeties, and Jean Mateer has done a really good job layering the football to him so far. That is his go-to target. But yeah, you mentioned the run game, at least with the running backs, still not quite where Brent Venables would like it to be.
And we've seen a lot of different examples of running quarterbacks. And it's funny because now we get to talk about it with Auburn, right? Having a running quarterback in Jackson Arnold. And you saw the game against Baylor, and really the game plan against Baylor for Jackson Arnold, is how Oklahoma has operated with John Mateer, I think, in all 3 games so far this season, especially in the Michigan game. And what I mean by that is, with him being the second leading rusher, that's not just off of scramble drills. That's not just off of broken plays. Oklahoma will have, in my estimation, just kind of guessing here, 6 to 10 designed quarterback runs this weekend against Auburn for John Mateer, based off of what Auburn decides to show them, based on what Auburn decides to do or disguise or end up bringing or what adjustments are made. I see John Mateer having 6 to 10, 7 to 10, whatever, designed quarterback runs in this football game on Saturday, because that's what they did against Michigan, and it worked really well. They did it when they needed to. Well-timed play calls helped Oklahoma beat Michigan, because that was a nasty game for the first half. Oklahoma was up 7-0 for most of it. They scored late in the second half. Michigan had a missed field goal in that game, and Oklahoma just kind of wore Michigan's defense down. But they didn't do it by running the football. They did it by getting it out wide, getting over the middle of the field, and finding some holes in this Michigan defense. That's what Oklahoma did. And that's what they're going to try and do against Auburn on Saturday.
You look at that Michigan game, again, that game in Norman when Oklahoma was the 18th ranked team in the country, Michigan was the 15th ranked team in the country. Oklahoma ran 74 plays, and 53 of them highly involved John Mateer. He was 21 of 34 through the air, also led the team with 19 carries. The next leading rusher had 6 carries. So you talk about your go-to guy, somebody that you trust, and rightfully so, with the ball in his hands. I think Jackson Arnold has a little bit more of a physicality factor when running the football. John Mateer, I think, is somebody that wants to operate in a little bit more space. Not that both cannot lower the shoulder, and not that Jackson Arnold doesn't have the speed that we've already seen him do or seen him use, but John Mateer is a little bit more of that quarterback read, get outside the tackles, make the cornerback miss, and get up into the second level. We've seen it with Jackson Arnold. Loves to scramble going forward, which I think is a very good thing, and you've seen the third and ones, the fourth and ones, where he has the mentality of, you can bring a running back, you can bring the jet sweep. At least as of right now, I'm keeping it just about every single time in short yardage situations. And we've talked about how that could come back to haunt Auburn maybe once or twice throughout the year if they can sell out on Jackson Arnold. That being said, you trust a guy to go get a yard if he's going to lower his head and try and run somebody over, which you've seen plenty of times already.
And John Mateer is not afraid to throw the ball on the run either.
No,
that's
something.
When I went back and watched the highlights of the Michigan-Oklahoma game, that's something I picked up on that he is continuing to do from what he was doing at Wazoo, was just because you get him out of the pocket doesn't mean he's just going to take off and run. He'll whip that sucker over the middle of the field with a sidearm throw, flick of the wrist. Now, he does have some turnovers and had a couple of bad throws against Michigan. He just airmailed his tight end over the middle against Michigan, and there was a safety waiting there to pick it off. John Mateer is not perfect, but he's really, really good. And he's been so good through the first three games of the season. Updated Heisman odds on this particular book I have pulled up, he's second in Heisman voting, or Heisman odds, I should say, right now.
It's plus like 700, isn't it?
He is plus 900 as of right now. Carson Beck is plus 750 at the leader. Right behind John Mateer is Dante Moore at Oregon. So John Mateer is getting some early love from people that are trying to make money on this whole thing. And he's a really, really good quarterback. Auburn defensively, before we flip sides of the ball and talk about Oklahoma defensively, and Auburn offensively, we got a text about Auburn's offense we'll get to in just a minute. Auburn defensively has to be disciplined in this game. Has to be. In all levels. I'm talking on the defensive line. I'm talking the linebackers. I'm talking corners and safeties as a unit, as the DBs. You have to be so disciplined in this game because of the reasons we're talking about with how talented John Mateer is at just making a play with his arm or his legs.
Yeah.
Defensive line, you've got to contain him. Linebackers, don't cheat. Don't cheat in this game. If the play's going right and you're supposed to follow left because they'll burn you if you don't. DBs, what have we talked about? They've got caught watching several times, especially those young corners out there. They've got caught peeking into the backfield, trying to read the play, trying to read the eyes like they were able to do in high school. And John Mateer will pick this defense apart if they don't play with discipline and don't play with the football IQ that we know that they have.
When you have somebody like John Mateer in the backfield, it opens up the offense so much because you know that it doesn't just have to be traditional play calling, and you don't have to rely on 11 guys to go out and successfully perform every single play for you to be able to move the ball 8 yards down the field almost every single time. When you have somebody like John Mateer, you're able to, A, grant the freedom, but allow things to go haywire there for a second, because more times than not, he's going to find a way to make a play, whether that's a busted coverage, whether that's a scramble, like what you're talking about, breaking the pocket but keeping his eyes downfield and possibly taking advantage of some of those younger corners in games that he's already played. You mentioned a couple of the receivers, or I'll mention a couple of the receivers, talking about guys that find ways to get open. Deion Burks and Keontae Lewis. They're 6'9 and 6'2, 5'9 and 6'2". But there's favorite playmakers.
6'9 would be out, wild.
That would be absolutely crazy, which would totally go against the point that I was about to make. But no, 5'9 and 6'2", both of them have two touchdowns on the year, but most of their success has come on those broken plays. They're not necessarily going to be the throw the 50-50 ball, go up and win it, but use their speed and John Mateer using that right arm, scrambling or sitting in the pocket is going to find a way to find them.
Let's get to the phone lines here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, 334-321-1390. Shane, you're on the line, my friend. How are you?
Hey, I'm well, guys. How are y'all?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just had a quick question. Do you think it's possible that through three games we've done what we've had to do in order to get by these games, and maybe we were kind of saving some for SEC play? It just seems like it's been really basic, like the first three games, you know, and it hasn't needed to be, you know, anything special. So could we see something a little bit different for the game with Oklahoma?
100%, Shane. 100%. Okay. We've talked about how vanilla this offense has been. I think against Baylor you saw a lot more of that, right? You saw Jackson Arnold have the freedom to step up in the pocket and run. You saw the design runs, the scrambles. I think against Ball State, and I've talked about this a little bit, I think the reason that the offensive line struggled in the passing game was because they were almost telling Jackson to sit in the pocket, try and find the receivers, and that's why Ball State was able to get to him a couple times. South Alabama, you saw a little bit more running with Jackson Arnold, but I still think the play calling was very, very vanilla. You've just had a quarterback in Jackson Arnold that can go and make the vanilla, can go and make the boring look boring and still be very successful doing so. We talked about Jackson in that Ball State game going 24 of 28, I believe, for 256 or something like that. But you would have never known that just by watching the game, because it was not sexy, right? You're not getting the media attention, but doing exactly what you needed to do, getting those 8-yard hitch routes, not doing anything fancy. I expect the full playbook to be open here against Oklahoma.
Is that the same for the defense? Did we hold any back on the defensive side of the ball? Just because we didn't really need to. We didn't really know what was going on with Baylor, and that dude's a good quarterback, and they got good receivers. So they're going to get their yards and score. As a two, we didn't really need to. Maybe we didn't play up to potential. And maybe, you know, this is where we turn it up a notch. You know, I'll hang up the listen, guys. For you.
Appreciate the call, Shane. Very good questions there, and I'll double down on the defensive side of the football and say, yes, that DJ Durkin has some things stowed away that they haven't had to use. The Baylor game was interesting, and I think Auburn could take some from the Baylor game and go into Oklahoma with it, because you're playing such a pro-style quarterback, guys that can absolutely sling it, guys that can run, Mateer can run much better than Baylor's quarterback, who's Sawyer Robertson, thank you, who is definitely more of the stand in the pocket, throw downfield, find a receiver, or wait for him to come back to the football type of guy. But Auburn, especially defensively, I believe it's going to be a lot more disguising, showing one thing and doing another. Something that's not on film already that Oklahoma, Texas A&M, Georgia, Missouri, these teams that you have coming up, stuff that they can't prepare for, stuff that they can't tell John Mateer, hey, if you see this, they're doing this. I believe in DJ Durkin to do those things on the defensive side of the football, and I agree with you. I think offensively, there's still a lot to be seen from Auburn.
We're going to dive into the defense here momentarily, because as successful as we've seen this OU offense, and again, looking at some of the team stats, 35.5 points per game, 472 yards per game, they're 19 of 40 on third down, they're 3 of 4 on fourth down, and John Mateer has only been sacked 4 times. But we feel like we may have found a little bit of a stat that Auburn can exploit on the defensive side of the football. I think it's the point that you're getting to. A little bit of disguises. Do everything you can to confuse John Mateer. But going back to Shane's points, before we hit the break, that South Alabama game versus Ball State, I feel like, is the perfect example of what Durkin did with his defense. Because Ball State, with all due respect, saying it like it is, might be the worst offense in the FBS. I don't know statistics on that, but they're at least up from the passing game, to where Auburn could just pin their ears back and do just about whatever they wanted to do. South Alabama, on the other hand, is a good offense. Not just in the Sun Belt. They're a good offense, and they will compete in the Sun Belt. But you saw DJ Durkin play off. It almost felt like that 11 a.m. SEC game where you feel like, why are these teams just moving the ball with ease? And I think it's because everything was played so soft to where you allowed South Alabama to almost do what they wanted to do in front of the first down marker, and then you bowed your neck in the red zone, got the stops, forced field goals. I think you're going to see a lot more from this defense going forward.
Auburn did what they had to do to win the first three games, but they did it in a way where they knew they were better than the other teams. This was not Auburn versus Georgia State a few years ago.
Sure.
Sorry, I get choked up when I think about it. When you had to bring T.J. Finley in off the bench to win a football game. Who's now at Georgia State, which is hilarious. This is not Auburn on the road at 2 a.m. in Berkeley finding any sort of way to pull it off and win and get home, and you did what you had to do to win. That sentence can be said in two separate ways.
Yeah.
You did what you had to do to win, and there's two different connotations here. Those are negative. This year is positive, and Auburn has a lot more ready to go for SEC play. We continue talking about this. Auburn and Oklahoma, what the Sooners will and might not present to the Tigers this weekend in Norman. We continue to get to your phone calls as well. 334-321-1390. The text box open along with it at 784-1067. We continue the Wednesday edition of On the Line after this. All right, we're back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Lots to get to and only a few minutes to do it. Let's get to the phone lines here really quickly, Christian. 334-321-1390. Andy, you're on the line, my friend. What's going on?
Hey, War Eagle, this won't take long. I don't know what I did on my TikTok, but it is just full of Oklahoma podcast and fans. They hate our quarterback, and they think he's going to do terrible. And I don't know if that's they're mad that he left or if he just did so bad for him. They generally don't like him. But it reminds me of, I told you before, my quarterback was Jason Campbell, where we were booing him, you know, his first year. And as he matured and got better, I mean, look at him. So I'm hoping that's the case with Arnold. But I don't know if you can go into the hatred they have, and they are, I love how they are so full that they're going to beat us, and rightfully so, but I love whenever a team comes here, like Mizzou a couple years ago, like, oh, y'all are going to beat us, and they end up winning. It's just like, man, yeah. Why do you have to say that? You know, like,
right.
You come in here like you got nothing to lose and all to gain, and that's a powerful, powerful tool to have. So hopefully we have that going for us, and I love their hatred because that can only backfire. All right, Wordle.
Thanks so much, Andy. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390.
Yeah, I've heard a little bit about Auburn and Oklahoma fans going at it on social media. I haven't really looked into too much of it. More so, I'm giggling at the national media pages trying to make this whole story about so much more than what it is. I saw On3 post something. I sent you the screenshot of
stupid.
It. Basically, Jackson, before entering the transfer portal, his dad let him know that the grass is not always greener. Okay.
I think it was greener.
And now he's going back to Norman by a John Mateer-led Sooner team. Like, okay, cool. The next sentence that he didn't say was the fact that it's pretty dang yellow in Norman right now for Jackson Arnold, that grass. And so it could honestly be one of the few times that both teams benefit and you move on and shake his hands. And that's why we've talked about Brent Venables and the respect that he's gained, at least from us on the media side of things, because he talked about it in Atlanta, how there was no bad blood, there was no negativity towards Jackson Arnold. And he doubled down with that on Monday, saying, I love the kid, I love his family, I want nothing but the best from him. But this game needs to be so much more than Jackson Arnold coming back to Norman. It needs to be Auburn and Oklahoma playing each other in the SEC.
And I think Hugh Freeze doubled down on that this week too, and has said several times, of course, people asking him about it, trying to get a clickable quote. He's like, no, we haven't really addressed it. It's just another football game, man.
Yeah.
It's just a football game. This
we act like the transfer portal, for some reason, we never talk about it because it's so normal, but then for some reason, a starting quarterback that struggled at a former school is now having success, and that has to become some major storyline.
And if Oklahoma fans are not fans of Jackson Arnold, or I asked you yesterday or the day before what his reception will be when he walks in, and we said maybe some boos here and there. The students may give him some crap, but most of the fans will be okay. Maybe that changes by the time Saturday rolls around and they want to boo him every time he's on the field. Who cares? He's a pro. Jackson Arnold's been there before. And here's my thing, too. Jackson Arnold, how long was Jackson Arnold in Norman, Oklahoma?
A year.
This is not LeBron James going to Miami and playing his first game on the road in Cleveland.
Yeah, let's go burn the jerseys before pregame.
Yeah, this is not Tom Brady making a trip to New England when he went to play in Tampa Bay. This is not any of that. This was a college quarterback who was in a bad situation, who won you more games than you would have won without him in Norman. He left, found a better situation, and you just happen to be on each other's schedule the next year. I don't think it's that big of a deal, but if the fans want to go that route and build up more hatred and tension before Saturday at 2:30, have at it.
I just...
Let fans be fans, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I promise you Jackson Arnold's fine. He's fine.
And if you're Jackson Arnold, how could you not relish in this moment? You've seen the swagger and the moxie that he has. Doing 360s, dancing his way into the end zone in Waco, running somebody over in the first down and letting somebody know about it. You can't tell me he's not looking forward to this game on Saturday.
Him and his family are pumped to get to Norman and get this game underway. And I think by Saturday at 2:30, both fan bases are going to be foaming at the mouth for the Tigers and the Sooners to kick it off on Saturday. We'll take a break, come back, and talk about a barn burner this past weekend. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joins us next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Thank you so much for being here. We're having a lot of fun on this sunny day here in the Auburn Opelika area. And we get to the phone lines to welcome in our first guest of the afternoon. He joins us each Wednesday at 2:30. He writes for Dogs 247 and covered one of the best games I think we're going to see all season long last week up in Knoxville. He is Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. My man, I don't know how you're going to do it or how you did it in your articles, but putting it into words what you got to witness last week in Knoxville had to have been incredible.
Oh, there's no telling that it was something special, and I'd apologize to anyone who read what I published right at the buzzer, because I don't know that it really made much sense. But no, it was one of the more intense games that I've seen in some time. Sure, we will break it down, and happy to hop on and try to make sense of it. Maybe a few days removed, I'll do a better job of explaining what we saw compared to right at the moment.
Well, there was so much conversation going into the game last week between Georgia and Tennessee. Of course, we had you on the program and got your thoughts on the Georgia perspective and the fact that they had won 8 in a row. But, I mean, this felt like one of the better Tennessee teams that's gone into this matchup in quite some time. And all of a sudden, Georgia walks out and they're victorious 44-41. I'm going to open up the floor, start to finish, Jordan, just your thoughts and kind of takeaways from what Georgia and Kirby Smart were able to do last Saturday afternoon.
You know, I think Tennessee deserves a lot of credit. Now, when you look at this year's game compared to at least the last four, makes up the Josh Heupel era at Tennessee, what Tennessee did that was so different compared to those previous games is they made explosive passes down the field. On average, those first four meetings against Tennessee with Josh Heupel as a head coach, on average, Georgia was only giving up four explosive passes per game, and explosive pass means it got at least 15 yards. In that game on Saturday, they had 9, and three of them went for over 30 yards, and each of those three were touchdowns. So Tennessee deserves a lot of credit, but, you know, credit due to Georgia. I mean, they got put in a tough spot, down 21-7 early. Thought there were some gutsy play calls. They go for it on fourth down. I want to say that was early in the second quarter, either early in the second quarter or late in the first, and then they wind up scoring a few plays later on a throw to Zach Branch. And, yeah, it was a game where, you know, talking about it in the aftermath, I pointed to some of the games I can remember from really the height of the Nick Saban dynasty at Alabama, where, you know, the team is backed into a corner and they're in a spot where they pretty much have no margin for error. I mean, they have to have a bunch of things go their way, and they find a way to do it. And Georgia deserves a lot of credit. I know that, you know, Max Gilbert, the Tennessee kicker, is going to get a lot of grief for missing that field goal, and understandably so because of the range and how much was riding on that kick. But, you know, you talk about Georgia going down the field and scoring with the Gunnar Stockton, the London Humphreys touchdown. Talk about getting the two-point conversion they had to have. They found a way to fight back in regulation, and then overtime it was really all Georgia. Tennessee couldn't do anything to open that overtime period, and then Georgia just ran the ball down Tennessee's throat and wound up scoring to end it. So a situation where, you know, after the fact, Kirby said a couple times that, you know, he felt like Tennessee deserved to win that game, and I agree with him, but at the same time, and I think this was Kirby's MO too, that's not to say Georgia didn't deserve to win it. You know, they put themselves in position to fight back. They left Tennessee in a spot a couple of times where Tennessee had to make a play. Tennessee did not, and Georgia capitalized.
I want to take you back to a play that may seem forgetful since it was the very first play from scrimmage for the Georgia Bulldogs, but it was something that I saw that immediately told me that Kirby Smart in this offense does not fear playing in Neyland Stadium, and they do not fear the environment of that game. It's a 45-yard pass down the far sideline from Gunnar Stockton to Colby Young right after Tennessee goes 8 plays, 75 yards, and punches Georgia in the mouth. 2.5 minutes go by, and you're down 7-0. And everybody sat there and said, all right, I don't know if Gunnar can respond. That was kind of the MO all week of, does he have the ability to get the job done through the air, or is Tennessee just going to be able to feast? What did that play kind of represent in your mind? That, again, that 45-yard pass on the very first play of the game, you couldn't have placed it better, and Georgia marches right back down the field, ties the game, and it feels like that was kind of that touchdown drive that, yes, Tennessee scored 14 more after, but really settled down the sideline.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was that play call by Mike Bobo showed the confidence he had in Gunnar Stockton. And, you know, I think that was more than anything, but I think, too, completing that pass, I think that internally, that probably settled Gunnar down.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like that first hit in like a boxing match. It's like, okay, we're here and we're going. And, you know, a lot of credit due to the game that Gunnar had. Wasn't perfect. I think there was a few times that he bailed from the pocket where he had a little bit more time to work with. Had a tough fumble in that third quarter that, luckily for Georgia, the defense bailed them out and just held Tennessee to a field goal. But, I mean, he was ripping it all game. I mean, I mentioned the fourth down pass early in the second drive, I believe, where he was able to convert and keep the drive going. The throw to London Humphreys, I don't think, could have been put in a better spot. Made some big plays even between those. So, yeah, I think more than anything, that was, for me, Mike Bobo saying, look, we feel confident in you. We know you can make this throw, and we want to open the door for you to do it. Gunnar came through. He came through throughout that game. And without some of those timely plays, I have no doubt Georgia would be sitting at 2-1 right now trying to find some answers going into the Alabama week.
Bookending those plays, the one to start the game and the last true play minus the kneel down before going to overtime. You mentioned it, the 28-yard touchdown pass from Gunnar Stockton to Landon Humphreys. Talk about what it was like inside that stadium, right? You've heard the crowd pops, right, when the crowd just goes absolutely nuts. What was it like being on the roadside for that? And everybody's losing their mind, understanding that this is pretty much the game right here, and Gunnar Stockton throws one of the prettiest balls you're going to see all season long, a front pylon ball that Humphreys comes back and makes a beautiful over-the-shoulder grab. What was it like feeling that emotion in the stadium kind of just go out all at once?
Yeah, it's a little bit harder these days in a press box that's not open air because it's a little bit harder to hear the crowd. But I think you could just tell by the reactions and even just seeing like on the Jumbotron or the TV broadcast that's shown in the press box that they understood the magnitude of that moment and what it meant. And at the same time, and I think Georgia did a great job of this, of not you know, totally losing it because they still needed the 2-point conversion. I mean, you score that and don't get the 2-point conversion, all of a sudden you're trying to decide, do you need an onside kick? Do you try to kick it and try to get the ball back, you know, get a stop on defense? So I think that was the biggest thing. And the thing I brought up on Saturday, and I've made sure to say it a few times, just what a gutsy call that was by Mike Bobo, because Georgia only needs 6 yards on that fourth down and they take a shot. Just imagine if that doesn't happen, if Gunner doesn't make that throw and London doesn't make that catch. I can already tell you the conversation would have been, why are you throwing to the end zone and you only need 6 yards to keep this drive alive? Kirby Smart talked about it a little bit after the fact that, you know, he was very mindful and he was reminding the staff on the headset, look, we got to score quick. I mean, because he knew that they needed the 2-point conversion and you wanted to have time in the event you didn't get that 2-point conversion. So, no, fantastic play call, very gutsy play call. But again, kind of goes back to the confidence in Gunner Stockton to make a play. He had, I'd say, his best throw of the day, probably his best throw to this point in his career. London Humphreys came up with a really tough sliding catch, and then the rest was history.
We're being joined by Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 here on ESPN 106.7 in Auburn, Opelika. He writes for Dogs 247, covering all things Georgia athletics. And now it's a bye week, right? An early bye week for Georgia, one of the two that they'll get so far in this 2025 campaign. And bye weeks are always a lot more fun after wins because, well, you get to talk about a win a little bit more often. But you prepare for Alabama, but it's a win that I'm sure Kirby is excited about but not pleased with. Do you have an idea, Jordan, on what the messaging is this week during the bye, what the focus is going to be for Georgia, and kind of what they're learning and preparing for during a bye week like this?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is a lot of self-reflection. You're trying to fix technique and really looking inward on what needs to be corrected. And we had a chance to talk to Kirby Smart and a couple of players on Tuesday, and they talked about understanding, you know, that this was a very valuable week. And, you know, there's always the self-reflection. Talking to a lot of the defenders, even going back to some of the guys we talked to on Saturday after that game, you know, understanding they had a lot to correct. But I thought Raylan Wilson, one of the linebackers, said it best that, you know, there's a lot of things we can fix. But, you know, basically the issues they had were very correctable. And Kirby talked a little bit about that on Tuesday, too, things. Like eye discipline and understanding your role. Chris Cole talked about, you know, playing as a team on defense and doing your role and counting on the guys around you to do their job. So I don't think there's a sense of panic after how the defense played. I mean, not their best day. You know, you give up 496 yards of offense, something we're not used to seeing with Georgia. But I think they know they can go into this bye week and correct it. And, you know, I think you can never have a ill-timed bye week playing in the SEC just because of how physical it is. And I do think this is really well-timed, especially before Alabama. Georgia needs to get healthy. Dwight Phillips Jr., one of the running backs, he's dealing with a midfoot injury, but I think having that bye week is going to help him, and I'd anticipate he'll be available for Alabama. And Georgia needs to get healthy on its offensive line. Right guard, Juan Gaston played a little bit on Saturday, and then he kind of was dealing with an ankle injury. And then Ernest Green, the starting right tackle, he had missed the week two game against Austin Peay, started against Tennessee but was not 100% and wound up coming out before halftime and not going back in. So I think especially with those questions on the offensive line and that right side, having this bye week is huge. Try to get those guys as close to 100% as possible, because you're going to want everybody available when Alabama comes to town, given the stakes of that game and how much it could mean for Georgia.
That is the next game for the Georgia Bulldogs at home under the lights against the Alabama Crimson Tide. As of right now, it is a top 15 matchup with Alabama being the 14th ranked team in the country. Who knows? They don't play this week either, so they may just jump up 8 spots and make this a top 10, top 5 game. You never know what's going to happen there. But yes, Georgia on a bye, so is Alabama, which will truly set up a big-time matchup in Athens next Saturday night. Early thoughts, Jordan, on what Alabama's done to this point, 2-1 on the year, and the fact that they have some extra time off too.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, myself included, were a little premature on writing off Alabama. Hey, hat tip to an old friend, Gus Malzahn, and that Florida State team. I think that they did a great job in week one, and I think that Florida State team is going to be an ACC contender, and as a result, a playoff contender. But I think Alabama's responded well after that week one loss. Been really impressed with Ty Simpson and what he's done to this point. He had another strong game over the weekend against Wisconsin. So I think it's a very dangerous opponent for Georgia. I don't think any Georgia fans listening should be surprised to hear that because of the history of this series and what Alabama's done. I think Alabama's won 9 of the last 10 when these two teams have played. So very dangerous opponent. Georgia, I think, is really grateful that this one's going to be at home. This will be the first time in 10 years that Georgia and Alabama have played in Sanford Stadium. So that's a big one. And I think that the crowd is going to be raucous and trying to affect that one. So I'm expecting a one possession game. I'm expecting a very tight contest. And yeah, I think it's a big opportunity for Georgia. I think when you look at Kirby Smart in his tenure, I mean, the one thing that's still kind of hanging out there is his inability to beat Alabama. Now, he did it one time, and there was a national title on the line, so that's not nothing, but I know that fans want to see more consistency against Alabama, and this will be a great opportunity to come out and extend the home winning streak, find a way to beat the Crimson Tide.
Georgia and Alabama next Saturday night in Sanford Stadium. Both teams on a bye this week, and a guy that will be there covering it live for the Georgia Bulldogs is Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. My friend, we always appreciate your time taking it out and talking to us on a Wednesday afternoon. Tell people where they can find all of your great coverage, and man, you get to enjoy the weekend of college football, huh? Kicking back and relaxing a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be nice. I know I'll be tuned in to Oklahoma-Auburn, and that will be a fun one to watch and see what goes on there. But yeah, dogs247.com, you can follow us there. Follow me on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at dogs247. Junkyard Dogcast podcast, we recorded a new one earlier today, wrapping up Tennessee game and some thoughts during the bye week. So fun time, busy time. Like you said, it will be nice to have a Saturday to kind of sit back a little bit, but by the time Saturday's done, the focus quickly turns to Alabama, and there will be no shortage of things to talk about going into that game. Super excited to get there and super excited to check back in with you guys next week and preview a big one in Athens.
Yep, we will do it Wednesday, 2:30 next week. We'll preview Georgia and Alabama, man. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds great. Thank you, guys.
Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Check him out at Dogs247. All the information you need on the Georgia Bulldogs, injury information, game time information, all that sorts of stuff. Best insight recruiting stuff there at Dogs247.com.
What I would give to beat Alabama for a national championship.
Yeah, right? He shrugged that off real quick, didn't he?
We haven't really beaten Alabama. The one time you did, though, was for a national championship. So, I mean, I guess that's
yeah,
I guess that's
but they haven't
cool,
done it in the regular season at home at night. I mean, come
is
on.
The college football world ready to have a conversation about Alabama going into Athens and winning that game?
No,
I don't think the world is ready for that conversation of that being a possibility.
Well, how about this early spread on that game? Since we are still a week and a half out, early spread, Georgia favored by 3.5 over Alabama next week.
It's a toss up.
Basically,
that's a pick'em game, right?
Yeah, that's basically a pick'em. We always talk about 3 points for the home team, and that's as close as it gets right there. Total over under 54.5.
Ooh,
I don't know on that. Bama's
initially
defense is
you
not
think,
great.
Yes, like, oh man, there should be a lot of points, but then it's like, oh man, this could be one of those 17-13 type
of
games.
I fully expect Kirby Smart's defense to respond, right? Yeah. I mean, you don't get torched on national television like that and not be able to respond if you're coached
especially
by
after,
Kirby Smart.
Especially after 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks to get it right. I don't know. I feel pretty good about Georgia in that game. But we'll talk more about that this time next week. Again, our man Jordan Hill of Dogs247 will join us on Wednesday. We'll take our final break, come back, and have a very quick baseball power 2.5
power
minutes.
Power 3 minutes.
Christian's going solo. We'll talk about that and wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. All right, Christian, it's your time to shine, my friend. Two and a half minutes, if that. Talking baseball, we're on the verge of the postseason. You can do a lot in 2 minutes. All right, here we go. You got it. It's all you, my friend.
All right, Phillies clinched the National League East. for what feels like the 19th straight time, because this year feels like it's been so long. Braves are playing for 2026. They wrap up their afternoon finale in D.C. here in about 10 minutes or so. Mets need to win 10 of their last 12 to clinch a wild card spot. They're taking on the Padres, who are two games back of the Dodgers. Speaking of the Dodgers, Otani's finally doing something that I've been pleading him to do for a very long time, and teasing a spot in the bullpen for the playoffs. Because why would you take a starter spot? Because the team gets cut. So take a bullpen piece and you can go pitch eight innings if you really need to and still be in the starting lineup. The Seattle Mariners are 10-0 in their last 10 games. They are now half a game up over the Houston Astros. These two meet in Houston for the second to last series starting this Friday. What a game that could be to determine one of the AL leagues. The Blue Jays are they've won six straight rather to basically put the AL East to bed. We'll definitely be watching that. Speaking of the AL East, the Red Sox are 2.5 games up on the Guardians for the AL wild card spot, and not a very easy task because you have the Rays, the Blue Jays, and the Tigers all in there.
Yeah, the Yankees decided to start hitting the baseball again, so that sucks. It's fine. Red Sox are fine. Everything's fine. We're still a playoff team.
That was easier than I thought it was. I kind of mowed that down right there.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. I mean, music's about to kick us out of here. How awesome would it be for the Mariners to win their division?
It would be sweet. It feels right with the year that Cal Raleigh's had. Having two more bombs last night.
Is it 56 like now that he has?
Something stupid. He needs 60 just from the standpoint of why not? Old big dumper.
I mean, he is just on a tear. And it's not even a tear. He's just good. He's just really, really good. I believe the Mariners have not won their division since 2001. So that would be cool to see that. That would be really cool to see Seattle pull that off. And nobody wants to see Houston win. So
no.
We'd love that. That's a double whammy right there if the Mariners are able to pull that off. Okay, hour number one. It's in the books. Stick around. We got a whole lot more coming up. In hour number two, we talk a little bit of football and then a lot of football with Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn and The Barn. That's all coming up in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate you being with us on what has turned out to be a gorgeous day in the Auburn Opelika area. Temperatures are climbing and summer is back, in case you missed it. Ta-da! It's here again. Welcome to Alabama in the middle of September. So
I think it'll be cool in February, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure we'll get a winter and then back to summer, and then I'll give you back to winter, and then we'll come back to summer.
By then, it's usually like a morning by afternoon basis.
Yeah. We haven't even got to the point of like wearing a pullover to work in the morning and then being too hot in the afternoon.
That's what, yeah.
Yeah.
The morning by afternoon where you're in pants and a hoodie and then all of a sudden you regret that more than anything when you're leaving.
Yeah, we really haven't had a whole lot of that. So, you know. Oh, well, it is what it is. So, appreciate you being with us as we start hour number two here on ESPN 106.7. This is On the Line. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back, no matter what that conversation might be. So, we appreciate you being with us. And if you were along for the ride in hour number one, thank you. We appreciate that. If you weren't and didn't weren't able to catch it, you can. You can go back and listen to it at ESPNAU.com later on today. You'll catch up with that in the podcast center with the podcast version of the show, because in hour number one, we have started diving deep into Oklahoma. Not necessarily Auburn. We'll hit some more on that here in the second hour, but just this Oklahoma team and what Auburn could expect or should expect from the Sooners on Saturday afternoon. We talked a lot about that, a couple of phone calls, a couple of text messages as well, and then we talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 and got all of the inside scoop on Georgia's win over Tennessee last weekend, the dramatic win over Tennessee last weekend, and what the bye week concerns will be for Kirby Smart this week. All of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, y'all know what day it is. It's Wednesday. It's hump day. It's Daryl Daprich day from 3:15 to 3:45 with Locked On Auburn and the Barn. We get his thoughts recapping South Alabama, just kind of the overall thoughts of the first three games of the season. Is Auburn battle-tested enough going into SEC play? We have some injury updates that we'll talk with him, and then just thoughts around the SEC in general before we do a big breakdown with him on Oklahoma on Saturday. But we're going to start it off talking a little bit about a conversation that we started in hour number one, but want to really dive into to start the show, or to start hour number two, rather, on this Oklahoma team being really, really talented, but maybe a weakness that Auburn can exploit if they want to find a way to pull off the upset on Saturday at 2:30. He's Jacob Goins. I'm Christian Griffin. Again, we appreciate everybody for being here with us on ESPN 106.7. The phone lines are open for five or so more minutes before we get to Daryl Daprich. If you have any thoughts or you want to join in on this conversation, 334-321-1390. And again, the text box is always open at 334-784-1067. Any questions that you would like us to talk about, any questions you would like for us to ask Daryl as well, you can shoot it in there on the phone lines as well. But we do have some injury news that we're going to get to momentarily with Daryl. But again, Damari Alston, a full participant in practice today, which really helps out the running back room. Champ Anthony also returning, and Freeze made some comments on how he expects the defensive communication to be a whole lot better with the Pirates in the secondary. And I know that's a big confidence factor for you. And again, it goes back to South Alabama of how you could have had just about every single one of those guys strap up the pads if needed, but they would have only been 70 or 80% rather than now you're 100% going into SEC play.
Yeah, I think most of the guys that didn't play against South could have played against them. Darrell is a different situation. I think you are probably going to be without Amaris Williams this weekend, which is really tough, but we got to hear Hugh Freeze on Monday talk about Jared Smith may slide into that spot, and he was already being called for by Auburn fans to get more playing time.
He finished second this past week, and I believe in freshman PFF, which is
wow. Okay, I didn't see that. Yeah. I would believe it. Absolutely. I mean, again, can we get that dude a New Jersey number? 41 is disgusting, but maybe he could just make it not disgusting and just wear it proudly.
Where that'll be Auburn's new defensive end number.
That's the LSU,
it's like LSU 7. Yes, exactly.
Is Auburn's 41, baby. Yes. Oh God, please no. Please no.
The top ranked freshman coming in defensively every year.
Yeah. Congratulations, rookie. You get 41. Yeah. Ugh. I mean, that's even a bad number in NASCAR. You don't even want that. But yes, I feel just this is truly off of my feeling, okay? Going into this Saturday against Oklahoma, you're going to have just about everybody available. I don't think Amaris Williams will play. I do think Jared Smith will slide into that spot. But good to hear about Damari Alston being back and seems to be ready to go. That's going to help this Auburn run game tremendously. And look, that's what Auburn is going to have to do against Oklahoma. Stop me if you've heard that before. Auburn's got to run the football. Stop me if you've heard this before. A team going on the road in conference play has to find a way to run the football. It is so elementary. It's ridiculous. But you have to find a way to do it. And if you do, you're going to be in a good spot. And I do think that Auburn health-wise will be good. You mentioned Champ Anthony as well. Very excited for myself to get him back because, look, we were having some conversations off air yesterday. I'm not betting against DJ Durkin and his defense until he gives me a reason to do so. I'm not going to do it. I don't care that South Alabama moved the football. Guess what? They didn't score. I don't care that Baylor moved the football. Guess what? They didn't score a whole lot. They scored 24 points. Good job. That wasn't enough to win.
24 points should not win the football game in Norman this weekend.
By who?
Either team.
You think?
I think if Auburn scores 24, I think if
either team scores 24, they lose.
I think if Auburn holds Oklahoma to 24 points, you should win the football game.
Oh yeah, okay, I agree.
Doubling down what you're saying against Baylor.
I see what you're saying. Absolutely, yeah. I've said that in football in general.
Yeah.
The last several years, the last five, maybe even last 10 years, I've been very vocal about this. If a defense holds a Power Four opponent, or even in the NFL too, you're starting to see that number go down, which is kind of crazy, but I think in big boy football, P4 in college or in the NFL, if you are a defense and you hold the opposing offense to 24 points on the scoreboard, you have done your job. You've done your job. Some people may argue 21. Some people may give you more grace and say 27, 28. I think 24 is that number.
And that's right where they're expecting this game. At 47.5, Oklahoma's what, a 5.5, 6.5 point favorite. So right around a 27-21, 28-21 type of game, they're at least expecting for Auburn, Oklahoma.
Which is why I've used the example of going back to last year's defense. When you look at games that Auburn lost a year ago, the defense gave up more than 24 points one time. And it was Georgia. That was it. And losses. That's all you did. The defense did their job a year ago. And so far they've done it up to this point. Now, competition steps up, sure. I think John Mateer is the best quarterback you've seen by far to this point. Sawyer Robertson's really good. I think John Mateer is better. And I think he could be one of the best quarterbacks you see all season long. But I'm not betting against DJ Durkin and his defense. And now that you have Champ Anthony back with communication, with the IQ, with the skill set, I think Auburn has the better defense in this football game.
I'll counteract and say I think Sawyer Robertson's a better natural quarterback. I think John Mateer is a better athlete.
I think John Mateer is a better playmaker.
That's what yes.
I think John Mateer is a winner.
Just from a straight quarterback perspective, I think. But, again, goes to the point of stepping up the levels just because of the playmaking ability. We're talking about the defense here while we have just a minute or two. I read up some of the offensive stats for Oklahoma so far this year, 35.5 points per game, 472 yards per game. They're 19 of 40 on third down. They're 3 of 4 on fourth down, and John Mateer has only been sacked four times. But we found a little stat that we feel like Auburn can exploit Oklahoma just a little bit. Now, it kind of builds off a conversation that we didn't have yesterday that we were planning on having, and we might dive a little bit more into this tomorrow, but it's the conversation of forcing turnovers versus not turning the ball over, right? Auburn so far this year is +2 in the turnover battle. Last year at this point, you were -7. So that's a pretty big plus right there for the Auburn Tigers. You've only had one lost fumble, and it was on the Ryan Gee catch and turn right at the first down marker.
Against Ball State.
Against Ball State. Yeah. Oklahoma is -5, and they have yet to force a turnover. The Brent Venables defense has not forced a turnover yet. They are 113th in turnover margin per game at -1.5, or -1.5. You want to talk about going on the road and winning a football game? Sometimes your best defense can be your offense in a game where you're facing John Mateer. You keep him on the sideline and you don't force the defense to go out, and you can put some of those long drives together running the football like you're talking about, or getting some of those chunk plays through the air. The best offense or your best defense can sometimes be your offense, and if your defense gets you a turnover and gets you the ball in plus territory, Auburn's got to find a way to take advantage. But man, if you win that turnover battle, you feel like you set yourself up for the possibility of an upset.
Which you feel like you could say going into every big-time game, but the numbers early on this season show it in this matchup in particular. The fact that Jackson Arnold hasn't given the football away. The running backs have not given the football away. The special teams in terms of kick and punt returning has been okay. It's been okay trying to figure that out this weekend with Bryce or Malcolm or Eric, right, trying to figure out what their full health is going to be back there.
I thought Bryce looked good
against
South Alabama.
Yeah, I did too. I don't know what he would do against P4. I would like to see him more involved just from a selfish standpoint of I think he's really talented and don't want to see him go on somewhere else.
Right.
But Auburn hasn't given it away, and defenses aren't forcing them to do so. Oklahoma will put pressure on Auburn's offense this weekend, but Auburn's defense will put pressure on Oklahoma's offense, and you're right. The turnover margin there, good find, is a big, big number that Auburn can take advantage of in Norman on Saturday afternoon. We'll bring that up and a whole lot more as we bring Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn. It's Double D Wednesday. He joins us on the phone lines coming up right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
As one texter just let us know on our On the Line text box, Double D Wednesday is the best day of the week. He is Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn. He joins us here on ESPN 106.7. My man, it's good to talk to you, and I hope everything is good in your world.
Good to talk to you, too, and everything is going well. Getting ready for the weekend. Big, big weekend in sports. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, there is so much going on in the world of sports.
Daryl, sure. That was me that texted, too, just to hype you up.
Oh, it was. Well, I got one from my wife, too. She does the same thing.
Wow. There you go.
What? She sends you nice text messages through the day? That's so nice of her.
To hype me up. Yeah. Like if I'm having, like if I need, you know, if I'm tired or spend, you know, one of those days, going to be those days at work, she'll send me something to get me fired up.
She just sends you all of the Oklahoma tweets that just, you just need to go and respond to, right? She knows how to ruffle the feathers.
Obviously, you haven't been following me on Twitter the last 2 hours because there have been some folks that were putting in body bags and zipping it up. And I'm cool with all that, but when people start dropping profanity on my feed, especially when there's kids that you know follow me on Twitter,
sure,
some and high school kids, then they get blocked. Other than that, I don't block people, but you can't be dropping F-bombs and stuff like that. That takes it to a new level. But there are some delusional fans out there that really it's been fun. It's been so educational today. I love it.
Educational, that's the word you're gonna use, huh?
Yeah, there's some good ones. You'll enjoy it. Get some popcorn. You'll enjoy it. You can read them for about half hour.
Oh, goodness. Well, hey, we're just so blessed and honored that you were able to take some time out of your Twitter day to come on and talk a little football with us. And we are going to talk some football because there's a lot to get to on the Oklahoma Sooners. Of course, Auburn heading to Norman this weekend, 2:30 kick for a mid-afternoon top 25 slate in the SEC. And we're going to talk about the Sooners in our second segment with you here today. But want to get your thoughts on Auburn's performance against South Alabama. A lot of fans seem to be up in arms about it, Daryl. It wasn't clean. Wasn't a 70-0 blowout. Defense gave up some yards. Offense couldn't convert. Are you worried that Auburn didn't look their absolute best this past Saturday against South Alabama?
Wasn't worried. I think frustration, unfulfilled are the adjectives I would use. I think it was an uneven performance, and I get the whole vanilla base stuff, but I think even, you know, being as basic as you can, Auburn should have had at least another score separation. That's my only complaint, if there is one. And I think what makes it difficult is that recency bias. You know, if you walk out of Jordan-Hare at halftime, you're feeling really, really good about that game. Auburn's up 28-9. You consider that a complete performance, whatever, if you win by three touchdowns. Auburn getting outscored 7-3 in the second half made that a little bit where people just kind of had a bad taste in their mouth when they left. I mean, you know, you're happy to get a two-score win, two max score win. It would have taken two touchdowns and 2 two-point conversions. But I think people would have felt better had Auburn made it, you know, 38-15, that one more score. So it was a little uneven of a performance. I do realize some guys got dinged up in the first half that could have played the second half. And when you're up three scores, Freeze decided just to hold them out. They could have cut. I feel like they would have went back in the game if, you know, South Alabama would have cut it to one score game.
Sure.
So I don't know. I mean, I think it's a tale of two halves. But I don't think anything that happened last Saturday has any kind of bearing at all on what's going to happen this Saturday.
Maybe a little unfulfilled with the last week performance in Jordan-Hare, but just through the first 3 weeks of the season, your overall thoughts winning against Baylor in Waco, Ball State, and now South Alabama. What are your overall thoughts, kind of recapping the first 3 weeks of the season?
I'm really glad that Auburn had that Baylor game. I think playing that Baylor game against a Power Four school with a really, really dynamic offense and going on the road and beating them two scores puts Auburn in a lot better position going into this conference slate.
Because, so Daryl, you said that Robertson's the best quarterback Auburn will see all year, right?
I do. I feel that way until proven otherwise. Now, again, that's to this point. I feel like it will be at the end of the year, too. Now, you know, Mateer could absolutely go off Saturday. Reed could go off. You know, you still got the Missouri quarterback. You know, I get it. I mean, I just think that at the end, just a prediction, that at the end of the year, Robertson will be the guy that has the most impressive numbers and will have put up the most yards probably against Auburn's defense. I really believe, having seen him with my own eyeballs, now I haven't seen Mateer, I get it. I've seen Reed, you know, but I think with just watching him and how he responded, he got sacked four times. He got pressured a ton against Auburn, mm-hmm. and he still dropped four dimes on him. So I really, really like it. So I think Auburn learned a lot from that performance. I think Mateer is similar. Mateer is a better runner. I think Robertson's better as far as taking care of the football. I like what Auburn's done for the first three games. I like what they've done from an offensive balance standpoint. I think they've showed just enough to give defensive coordinators something to think about in the way of they can run it or they can throw it. But I do believe there's a lot that's been held back. And I think there's some things that we're seeing or that have been seen that I think Auburn thinks they could take advantage of come Saturday.
But we're in agreement, Darryl, and again, not diving into Oklahoma too much yet. We'll do that after our bottom of the hour break. But this is a step up that Auburn is going into on Saturday. Tougher environment, tougher team, tougher coaches. I mean, this is a tougher test than Auburn has seen up to this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Norman is a much harder place to win than Waco is, I think. I think Oklahoma's defense is better than Baylor's defense. I think Baylor's offense is better than Oklahoma's offense. I just do. I think, you know, Oklahoma has not run it at all, and Baylor at least had that threat with Washington. So it is a step up, absolutely. And Auburn's going to have to play its best game of the year to this point to get out of Norman with a win, because you're playing on the road. It's difficult to play on the road. But, you know, anybody that thinks going to Norman is something that's so foreign – I mean, they're making it out to be the Oklahoma fans like it's this incredible environment unlike ever seen by Auburn, who has gone into LSU, gone into Florida, gone into Athens, gone into Tuscaloosa. I mean, they've played at tough places before. Welcome to the SEC, Oklahoma. You act like – I mean, that may have been different and unique for the Big 12, but it's commonplace to go into a stadium like that for the SEC. It's just called another Saturday is all it is. You know, I mean, it's I get it. Arizona, Arizona State, Baylor, TCU, Kansas, going into Oklahoma is a big deal compared to going into some of those other stadiums in the Big 12. But what we call that in the SEC is Saturday.
Oklahoma's football stadium holds almost 84,000 people, which is about
okay,
on
what
par.
What does Neyland hold?
Neyland holds what? They had like 105,000 people in there Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn, when they went to Tuscaloosa last year, that's almost 100,000, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Auburn's played at LSU. Now, I mean, some of these kids haven't, but played at Athens, which is a very, you know, hostile place to play. I mean, it's not like Hugh Freeze and Auburn hasn't played in hostile environment. I get it. It's not easy to win in those places, but this isn't anything unique or new. And so Auburn's going to have to play its best game to this point. They're going to have to force some turnovers. Mateer's going to have to turn it over. He's been apt to do that at times during the year, especially when you put pressure on him. He's very, very good with a clean pocket, Heisman-like. When it gets a little bit messy and he's got to scramble a little bit, and it's not a clean pocket, he turns it over some. He throws some interceptions. So, you know, here's the thing. Auburn can completely sell out as far as the passing game is concerned. They can use their linebackers to spy Mateer. They can drop off the line of scrimmage and drop into coverage. They're going to make Oklahoma beat them by running the football, and I just don't know. I mean, Oklahoma may be able to do enough if they get 450 yards passing in the air. I get that. And if Auburn's offense doesn't have a good game, but I think Auburn's going to try to make them one dimensional, and I think that they're going to probably be able to do that.
We shall see. We're talking Auburn and Oklahoma as the Tigers are in Norman, the big bad Norman, Oklahoma, where there ain't no love, apparently, according to Oklahoma fans. We'll talk more about the Sooners and what they'll present this Saturday, plus if Darryl's worried about injuries for Auburn, and can the Tigers start SEC play 1-0. It's Double D Wednesday with Darryl Daprich of Locked on Auburn in the Barn. We got another segment with him coming up right after this.
Through hour number two, you've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We got our man Darryl Daprich of Locked on Auburn in the Barn with us on the phone lines for our second segment of the day. Man, plug it all. Tell people what you got going on, especially in preparation for the Oklahoma game this Saturday.
Sure. Wednesdays and Fridays, Locked on Auburn with Zach Blackerby, wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube as well. And then Saturday, we will record after the game a reaction show that will drop Sunday morning at 6 a.m. We record that within an hour after the game ending. It'll be a little different since Auburn's on the road, and I'm not going to be there covering the press conference and all that. And then, Monday mornings, 7:10. With our good friend Ben Taylor, and so I enjoy that as well. And on your news talk station there, so it's a pretty busy week when it's game times and game weeks. And being on the road will be a little different this time. This will be the first Auburn game I don't cover in person this year, so it'll be snack time, watching the game, and maybe a nice beverage. And yeah, try to still tweet through it. But
what's the go-to at-home snack?
The live tweeting. I'm just saying the live tweeting part of it has been really enjoyable for me, and I know that some people have different takes on that. You're watching the game. Why do you need someone to tell you what's going on? Well, sometimes there's different perspectives that you can give, and maybe you could give a little funny anecdote, something like that, you know, or give a little insight, something you hear in the press box that you can share with your followers and that kind of thing. So it also helps me stay really, really engaged in the game. You say that, I say that, and then I'm asking you sit next to me, how many yards was that, Jacob? And then as you put down your little rye bread, you're like, Christian, how many yards was that?
And then I'm like, Darryl, dang it, I'm going to grab you a Coke Zero. I didn't see the play.
I know. You're killing me. I when I'm so locked in on my laptop and I'm typing, I'm like, wait a minute, I don't want to go back out of this window. Jacob, tell me how many yards that was.
Yeah, hey, just, like, folks, he's not lying. Darryl is so zoned in on his laptop screen when he's in this press box at Jordan-Hare. He is dedicated to sending out those tweets for you, so just appreciate it.
Well, I'm doing stuff for the Barn, too. I mean, so right. You know, I'm doing, like, the live game thread for the Barn. I mean, Lance Dahl does a great job on that, but I may add a little bit of input on some stuff. So, yeah, and I've got the stats opened, and, you know, I guess I could always go back. Minimizing is a really – cool thing to do for us Gen Xers. But yeah, it's fun, and I really enjoy it, and it'll be a little bit different just sitting in front of the television.
All right, before we talk about Oklahoma, since you are going to be covering, well, I'm putting that in major quotations here in the studio, since you're covering the game from home this weekend, Darryl, what's the go-to home football snack when you're watching football?
All right, so I'm actually going to a friend's house to watch the game, a very, very big Auburn supporter who I've tailgated, who's, you know, a lot of people from the barn and Locked On Auburn have actually stopped by their tailgate last year. So okay. He's inviting me to his house, and I think he's grilling out. And so I don't know what he's going to have. I'm sure he'll have burgers and wings, and, again, we'll probably have a nice bourbon to watch the game with. And there's a rumor that there may be some cigars present, but they will not get fired up unless Auburn wins.
I love it.
And it'll just be kind of a relaxing. I'll get over there a little bit earlier. That's the fun thing, too. You get over there earlier, watch other games, right? So that's the go-to. I will not be bringing any Mike and Ike's or any of the little rye bread Chex Mix stuff. I save that for the press box.
That's right.
And I don't cheat on Jacob Goins with that stuff.
Wow.
So that's how we roll with that.
I mean, when you have burgers and dogs and other nice things, then, yeah, you can leave the Mike and Ikes at home. And we'll make sure we get our fair share of those for the next home game, which will be for a couple of weeks. But
a couple of weeks. Georgia game, that should be interesting. That should be fun. But, yeah, a lot of business to take care of from now until then.
And it starts with Oklahoma this Saturday in Norman. Again, we got Daryl Dappert of Locked On Auburn in the barn with us here on ESPN 106.7. Let's talk about the Sooners, Daryl, because the Sooners want to talk about Auburn, so we should talk about the Sooners, right? We may as well talk about them and what they're going to be presenting to Auburn this weekend. I start you with this. Are you more concerned with Oklahoma's offense or Oklahoma's defense, and why?
Great question. Defensively. I think I'm more concerned defensively because I think their offense to this point has been one-dimensional. And anytime you know the answers to the test, it makes it easier to get an A. So if you say, okay, we stop Mateer, we win the game, now that's not saying you can or you will, but you try to limit him. So you say, okay, Mateer is going to get his, just don't let somebody else rise up. Don't let Ott go off. Or, you know, or Blaylock go off, or any of their receivers. So I'm a little bit more concerned with the defense because of Venables being a defensive-minded coach and knowing, you know, Jackson Arnold's tendencies, just like Jackson Arnold knows terminology and schemes and that kind of stuff, too, with Oklahoma. So I would say right now, especially since Oklahoma's offensive line is battered again, there's two or three guys that aren't playing, allegedly. So maybe that defensive line for Auburn could eat and get some pressure on Mateer and get some turnovers, and this could get, you know, comfortable if you cash in on those. Defensively, Venables knows what he's doing. Remember, Auburn had 460 yards last year on this Oklahoma defense that was so highly touted coming in. I mean, Thorne threw for 340, Jarquez went off. If not for a brain cramp that, you know, Thorne throws the ball the other way to the linebacker, Auburn wins or missed kicks, Auburn wins that game. Had that game in hand late. So the defense, the adjustments that Venables makes is going to be key. And I think that's the thing I'm worried the most about.
Daryl, right before you got on here, we had a fun conversation about the comparison of forcing turnovers versus not turning the football over. Last year at this point, Auburn was -7 in the turnover margin. This year, they're +2, only having that one forced or that one lost fumble with Ryan Yee against Ball State. Oklahoma, however, is -5, and they have not forced a turnover on the defensive side of the football field. How can turnovers play a big battle in Norman?
Well, if you think about it, and this is because at 56 I had to go back and take calculus this year, that's a +9 on the net for the turnovers. You see, you like how I use that algebra?
I like that a lot. That was really good.
Nice. That's that college degree, college degree.
Yeah, I mean, you go for a +9, zip, just popped right into my head. I didn't even know stinking calculator that. So, I mean, a +9 net from a turnover, you know, improvement from the previous year is big. And I think, you know, Auburn, I think it's going to be hard for Auburn to win this game on the road in Norman without being on the positive side of the turnover ledger. I'm not saying it can't happen, but I just foresee a situation where if Auburn's +1 or +2 and pays those off into points because they've been so dynamic in the red zone, it's going to make it difficult for Oklahoma. And I think if Oklahoma's offensive line is battered a little bit and Auburn does get pressure on Mateer and Mateer does throw earlier off his back foot, some of the things he's done against Michigan and some other teams, although he's had a great year so far, and you can capitalize on those. It's a It's a huge advantage, but Auburn they've only missed one kick this year. It was a 50-yarder right before half. But I mean, they've converted their kicks, they've converted their PATs, they've converted when they've got in the red zone, they've held on to the football, right? I mean, they've done a really good job of doing that. And so, yeah, I mean, I like their chances if they can get a couple turnovers. And I think defensively, guys, something to look for. Venables has made it known. It's his DNA. It's his footprint, how he does things, philosophy. He loves to make sure you can't take the top off on him and go down deep down the field.
Mm.
And he also tries to take away the boundaries. Well, that leaves the middle of the field wide open.
There it
is.
And
if you look back on what Auburn did last week, they used the middle of the field a lot more than they had the previous 2 weeks. Look for that. Look for an advantage, the way they slant their defensive linemen, the way they do certain things, the middle of the field, whether it's Arnold keeping it and getting past that first layer to the middle of the field, Jeremiah Cobb sitting down 10 yards past the line of scrimmage on the first layer being open for the dump-off pass and running with yards after the catch, or Singleton like he did in the middle of the field last week. It'll be there. Auburn just needs to be patient and take it, and take what the defense gives them.
Well, that's what I was just about to say, Darryl. Sounds like you're telling us that for the fourth week in a row, Auburn offensively just has to take what the defense gives them, and they have a good chance to win the football game.
There's some things I think it's just that they've seen in this week of practice that they feel like they could take advantage of. I'll put it that way. And I have to believe that it's the middle of the field. I have no knowledge of what it is. I'm not letting out any secrets. I'm just guessing. I think the middle of the field's there, and I would keep a very close eye on that. Arnold in the shotgun, Singleton in the jet sweep motion. Because when they've run that play, I went back and looked, and it took a while to do it. When Auburn has run that formation and used that play where they run Singleton in jet sweep, mm-hmm. and either they hand it to Singleton or Arnold keeps it, they're averaging 6 yards per play.
Which they haven't given it to Singleton all that much on that play, it doesn't
they
seem
did
like.
More, they did more last week, which yeah. tells me they're setting something up.
Okay.
Now, one time they did what I thought they were going to do, and a lot of people were like, no, save it for Oklahoma. Remember against Ball State, Singleton came out of the backfield in a wheel route, and Arnold hit him
yeah.
with that same formation, and it was wide open. I think the other side of the field has some potential to be wide open as well. And Arnold hasn't even looked that way. He hasn't even glanced that way. And to me, that's eye discipline. I think that's by design. I think it's so he doesn't want to tip anything. I think that they know it's there. There's a lot of different things that can run off that formation. And there's a lot of other receivers that can get open off that formation to the other side. You start doing that. Let's just say, for instance, you hit Simmons up the seam like you did against Baylor off that. Well, then Oklahoma's defensive backs start playing off the line of scrimmage. When they run that formation, they're thinking, okay, Auburn's going to throw off this. They can throw off this. Well, then you hand it to Singleton or you fake it to Singleton to let Jackson run it. And I'm telling you, you're going to get 10, 15 yards at a pop. You just have to be patient to take those 10, 15-yard chunks at a time. And like the old ball coach at the Kansas City Chiefs coach from a long time ago said, just keep matriculating it down the field. Nice and easy. Just go down the field. Auburn did a great job of burning a lot of clock, 6, 7, 8-minute drives last week. You do that against Oklahoma, keep Mateer on the sideline sucking Gatorade, and you pay it off with either a field goal or a touchdown and take 7, 8 minutes off the clock because you're getting it in chunks, 8 yards here, 10 yards here. That's very beneficial.
So, Darryl, what I'm hearing you say is that Eric Singleton's going to take the jet sweep and throw for a touchdown. He called it here. I'm just saying
that's
it.
What I heard.
I don't think yep. Singleton's going to take it. I think it's there if they shade that side and trail him.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Like follow.
Oh no, I do.
Like
I hear Singleton pass to Malcolm. Malcolm pass back to Arnold. Arnold rushes in and then pitch play to Cobb for a touchdown. That's what I heard.
Let's say they saw what happened against Ball State, and Venables is in there with his defensive coordinator and says, "Hey, when they run this formation, watch Singleton on the wheel right out of the backfield, mm-hmm. and let's shade a safety that way."
Right. Yeah.
Let's say they do that. Who the heck's wide open on the other side of the field then?
Anybody.
Number eight, yeah. Number four.
Cam, three. Yeah.
Even if you start on that near side, the same side that Eric's going, you leak him over the weak side, and he's right there.
Yep. I would love to see a throwback screen off something like that. Oh, my gosh, would that be beautiful. I mean, of course, Cobb isn't in the game when they do that, but if you could even do that to a tight end that hangs on, you know, do a throwback screen where everything is flowing one way.
Frazier,
remember the play that they did against Georgia in 2017 where Stidham
the carry on, yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, he's still running. Carry on ran right through North Alabama, went through UNA, went to Tennessee, still running. That stuff like that has not even been sniffed yet offensively.
Singleton's going to plant, throw it back to Jackson Arnold, and it's like that screen that everybody's out in front of. No, just kidding. But going off of that play that you've alluded to, we've had a conversation earlier in the show about how many times Jackson will have, or I guess Jackson Arnold and John Mateer will have design runs. With Damari Alston now fully back healthy, how many design runs do you think Hugh Freeze gives Jackson Arnold rather than it being Jackson Arnold playmaking with his legs?
It depends on what Venables does. Venables knows that Arnold can beat you with his legs. He saw it firsthand when they beat Alabama last year. So Venables may look at that and say, I'm not letting Jackson Arnold beat me with his legs. He's going to have to beat me with his arm. If they take that away, then there shouldn't be a lot of design runs. It should just be improvised or scrambling or getting out, play breaks down, that kind of thing. So I don't know until I see what defense Venables, if they sit in that too high like Aranda did, and say, I'm taking away the boundaries and I'm taking away the deep ball, Arnold will carry the ball 10 to 12 times by design. If they don't and they try to, you know, stack the box a little bit, bring a linebacker up, bring a spy, don't let Jackson run it, then you're going to see a lot of slants and a lot of posts.
He is Darryl Dapperidge of Locked On Auburn and the Barn. He's with us every Wednesday, 3:15 to 3:45, two segments in a row. And, man, we appreciate you and your time as always. Are you willing to give us a prediction? Is it too early in the week? Are you giving away too much? Okay.
I'm ready.
It's up to you, my friend.
I'm going to say Auburn 27, Oklahoma 23.
Boom, 27-23. Tigers walk out of Norman 4-0. If that happens, Darryl, I don't want to keep you too long. How does that change expectations for the next three games if Auburn wins on Saturday?
You probably just shoot for winning two or three, and you're still in the playoff picture. There's still a ton to play for. You're playing with house money at that point, in my opinion.
I think so. Darryl, we appreciate you, my friend. Get back to work. Get back on Twitter there. You're losing minutes.
I think I'm going to stay off it for a little bit.
Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
All right. Take care.
Darryl Dapperidge, Locked On Auburn and the Barn, and famous on the X as well. You can go find him however you would like to on social media, on the interwebs as well. 27-23. That's his prediction, Christian. That's what he's got. He's got 27-23 and two. I believe Shane's call earlier in the show, he was asking about wanting to see more from Auburn's offense and whether they were going to do that. We said yes, and so did Darryl.
I think it comes to the point of you've seen, and so many play callers have this, right, to where you have the one base play, but there's four different things that you can go out of that. Whether that's, again, you've seen two of probably the five options on that brings Eric Singleton or Bryce Cann, you saw it once against South Alabama, bring him in motion. Jackson either keeps it up the middle, which he tends to do on third and one, fourth and one, things like that. On first down, you see a little bit more of that being the true jet sweep. There's going to be two, three more wrinkles, which is what Darryl and us were alluding to, of that throwback screen or the throw out of that or the weak side something on that play, and you know that there's three or four more that have multiple more wrinkles that you have not seen quite yet that you fully expect to be 100% available here this weekend.
We appreciate Darryl Dapperidge joining us as he does every Wednesday. We'll take our final break here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Come back and wrap it all up right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Been a fun show today, man. If you missed any of it, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. We post that for you on our station website at ESPNAU.com in the podcast center. Or wherever you get your podcast, you can just search On the Line and you'll find it right there. So we'll get that posted for you shortly after today's show. Two wonderful guests, as we always have on Wednesdays, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 in hour number one. Got some more information on Georgia's comeback win over Tennessee and possibly the game of the year so far in college football, plus what Georgia's focusing on in a bye week before Alabama comes to town next Saturday. Then we just got off the phone with Daryl Dapperch of Locked On Auburn, talking a lot of Tiger football, injury updates, diving into Oklahoma. We did some of that in hour number one as well, so it's been a very informative show. If you missed it, check it out, ESPNAU.com.
Yeah, Wednesdays are kind of that day where you wrap up the recap of the previous week and then begin to shift your focus onto this Saturday. And so, yeah, talking in hour number one, not as much about the game as a whole, but really kind of diving down, giving you names that you need to know about Oklahoma, what they want to do offensively, what they want to do defensively. Daryl was really able to dive into what Venables wants to do on the defensive side of the football, and he brings up a bunch of good points about wanting to take away the boundaries and wanting to avoid giving up the deep ball. And we saw Jackson Arnold, and maybe this was, again, that game planning, that strategic maneuver from these offensive coordinators that know football better than all of the listeners do, better than we do all probably combined, of, all right, let's force feed Eric Singleton the ball over the middle of the field. Let's start running some of these routes that are in between the linebackers and the safeties, or, you know, little stop routes in zone, because you know that's going to be what they're going to try to do defensively in Norman. And so we saw a lot of that. Eric had, I believe, six catches, and a lot of those, again, were over the middle of the field. And so Daryl brings up some really good points, and I know we're going to dive into the more specifics on the game starting here tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm really curious, though. In the back of my mind, I said it late last week, early this week. In the back of my mind, I wonder if Brent Venables and his ego will get the best of him, and they're just going to press man-to-man, bring the house, and make Jackson Arnold, like Daryl said, make him beat you with his arm. I would not be surprised if that's what BV decides to do.
Well, that's what we talked about.
And honestly,
week,
I hope they do.
Last week, I saw a stat that said Jackson's 4 of 7 on throwing the ball 20 yards down the field this year.
It's pretty good.
It is pretty good, but
small volume.
But only 4 of 7. And so that goes to show that you have not had that big sample size. And if you're Brent Venables, do you continue to do what the other teams have done and force Auburn to use up 8 minutes on 12 plays? Or do you try and, all right, we'll tempt you with that deep ball. You want to use your receivers and that new polished quarterback? All right, pick them up off the dirt when you get done.
I'm tapping into that Hugh Freeze ego, too. All he's done is talk about how hard it is not to throw the deep ball. If I'm Oklahoma, I make sure he doesn't throw the deep ball. We'll see how it goes. Hey, we're talking more tomorrow, NFL, as the new week begins. Plus, head coach Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School Football will join us, and two other guests as well, Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network and Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. Loaded show tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.